Hello, and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster, and I am absolutely here with the whole crew. And before I ask anybody how they're doing, I'm going to ask Stephanie how she's doing, since it is International Women's Day, Woman's Day. What is the correct term here, Stephanie?
I don't even know.
What? It's your day.
Do I know these things? Every day is my day, Rob.
It is. It's every day is Stephanie's day, for sure.
Yeah. So things are good. It's been a busy week. Was on the road with Mark this week, so got to see lots of customers in person and travel across the country, as we do, going to visit customers. So
what's it really like traveling with Mark?
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, you get to know Mark very well.
Do you?
So this is not a bad thing. You get to eat good food, because I will not go out traveling and then stop at like an Olive Garden or anything like that.
He's such a diva.
Well, I'm not a diva. I just, if I don't want to go eat at a place that I can eat at home. I used to work with this woman, and great woman. Nothing against her. It's National Women's Day and all. But anytime we went on a business trip, she would only eat at Olive Garden. That's the only place she would eat. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? We're like going to this major city with all these places to choose from, and you'll only eat at Olive Garden. It drives me crazy. I don't want to eat anything that I can get in a normal city.
You know, I was a road warrior for a while, and it's easy to get in that groove, right? Because I felt like I got to the point to where, and Brett, you don't have this problem much in the UK, I don't think, because every place seems to be a little different, there to where it's, you know, different choosings and stuff for food. But I would always find myself staying in a place that had, you know, I would always stay in like a Courtyard by Marriott. And close to there, there was a Target store, and there was also a Panera Bread, and there was an Olive Garden and all this stuff. So I felt no matter where I was in the country, I was always basically in the same city, which was my hometown, and I would find myself eating at these same places, and it does get mundane. So it is actually, I think it is kind of cool that you do that. You try to mix it up and see what's local, and that is, and I know a lot of people that listen to the show travel a lot as well, and you know, it is good to get out and just find the local flavor of wherever you are, whether it's a meal or a beer or something like that. I think that's super important.
Case in point. We've hit a lot of hole-in-the-wall restaurants and bars, too.
Yeah. But case in point, there's a place in downtown Dallas called Spice in the City, and it is an Indian restaurant. But one of the dishes they had there was tikka, shrimp, and grits. It was amazing. They made like a tikka masala out of shrimp, served it over jalapeno cheddar grits.
That is genius. That might actually be the best thing I've heard to eat this week. That sounds genius.
I bet you most Indians don't know what grits are.
Maybe not in India, but in Dallas, I assure you they do.
it was worth it. It was fantastic. It really was. Spice in the City.
But stuff like that, right? You would have never, if you were eating at Olive Garden, you would have got the breadsticks.
<You know? laughs> Hey, there's nothing wrong with breadsticks if that's your thing. However, yeah, Mark has dragged me into a lot of really random places. That might be the best food we've had in a while, though. I feel like we tend to, sometimes we have trips where we'll try new stuff, and because it's new and you don't know what you're in for, you get a lot of really average food, too.
But this is true.
Yelp is okay. Not always.
But it's average food that you can't get in your city. Well,
exactly.
At a different place. I mean, you could always get a hamburger, but not that hamburger, right?
So I know that we have a reputation, especially in the United States, for not having very good food. would you say that's true?
You know, I would say the reputation is accurate. The reality is radically different.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think some of those things that you mentioned, I mean, I really enjoy some of the American food over there. And even from some of the chain restaurants, I think, you know, Olive Garden, that they do a really good pasta and what have you. But it is different over here. And I think, it's not stuff that you're going to find, like you said, in every single town. You can go into a pub or a restaurant and it's going to be unique. They'll have their own sort of slant on the dishes and what have you. And you can even go back to the same pub twice and the meal is going to be slightly different depending on what mood the chef was in. or what he had in the kitchen that night.
Yeah, I learned that you can go to the UK and go to a chippy and get a fried Mars bar. So
no, I didn't do that. No,
but I think that's
for tourists.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about the UK, though, is that it is things are very unique from city to city and even village to village. And even if you go back to the same place, two different nights in a row, like you said, you could have a radically different food experience. And I think that's we are losing that a lot in the U.S. I do feel that we are becoming more gentrified and we are becoming more cookie cutter, right? I could be in the town I live in. Yeah. I could be in Tulsa. I could be in Dallas. I could do whatever. And I could find the same restaurants. I could eat the same food with the Starbucks. Same. Yeah, yeah.
Starbucks same on every corner.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually have a Starbucks that I can walk to now from my house, which is bizarre. It's easy. And you don't have that as much in the UK. And I really wish we had more of that type of experience to where it was a cultural thing. So when you traveled somewhere, you got a local flavor of the food for what it is that day. And I think that's, I think we're losing that very quickly here.
I was going to say, should we meet at Starbucks in Seattle? Should we?
Do you see us
all? You know the one in Seattle, right?
we're judging you an American right now. Right.
Yeah, I think there might be a few there, but yeah. In fact, Rob, I had a Facebook memory today. It was today that we went to the Swan in my village, and we are absolutely blessed with that place. So we have our village here has, I don't know, probably 50 houses or something like that, and a pub. That's it. And the pub is a Michelin restaurant, and it is super, oh, wow. Really, really good food.
It's ridiculous. I mean, that's like your local.
It takes me 5 minutes to walk there. And yeah, it's really excellent.
Now, with it being a Michelin star, I will say the beer and the drinks are not cheap, but they are quality. They are quality.
Yeah. And that's with the conversion rate as it is now. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So, Brett, what have you been up to?
So we have been pretty busy. We are currently working on next sort of iteration on our products. So last year we launched a lot of our products as under the SharePoint framework, and I've been working. I know Mark's familiar with what we've been doing here, but we've been working as part of a team to develop the Microsoft Teams tabs. So under the framework, getting what is a client-side web part to also show up in a Microsoft Teams tab. So this is something that Microsoft is pushing, and we're eagerly waiting for the .NET, that's it, SharePoint framework 1.8, which should be launched anytime soon. And that will allow us to push out our products and not just have them available inside SharePoint, but also inside Teams as well. So we've been busy working on some of that stuff. And yesterday I did a webinar on one of our products, which people will know as the Lightning Connector. It's our biggest selling tool that rolls up SharePoint lists. And one of the things we've done with that is also had that working now with the Graph API. And so you can go and get content from anywhere. It's not just lists anymore, but people are being advised to not use task lists and to use Planner or something like that instead. And we find that that's still going to be a need to display that content either in SharePoint or also in Teams now. I know you can display Planner anyway inside a Teams tab, but the Lightning Connector is sort of famous for its conditional formatting and things like that that you can do to highlight some of that content. So, yeah, that's what we've been doing. Pretty busy with some of that stuff. So we've built a nice little interface in our Lightning Connector that means you don't have to build your own graph queries. You can it's all point and click. So you can choose your entity, which might be OneDrive or Planner or users or something like that, and then we've gone and created a whole bunch of predefined filters that you can just select and refine to your needs, and then it displays the columns. You can select them and you can style them and what have you. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to. And apart from that, I've also ordered a caravan.
What's a caravan?
Does that mean something?
speak American.
A caravan, like a trailer that you put in the back of your car that people sleep in.
Oh, like a camper.
Yeah, a camper.
You call it a camper. Oh, we call it a caravan. Yeah.
A Caravan, yeah, name brand van here. Okay. Dodge Caravan.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. that's cool. I saw that episode on Inbetweeners. That's actually that's cool. Where do you plan to go?
We're gonna plan to go initially over around the UK up to Scotland and places like that, and then maybe also next year sort of into mainland Europe.
Are you going to join a caravan club? And
yeah.
Do the whole, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to wear a flat cap and all sorts of things.
I love it. That's a cultural reference thing, by the way, folks. That's
yeah. We got this. Sarah was painting the vision, saying how, you know, we're going to tow this caravan. We're going to put it into a beautiful field overlooking some lakes or something. We'll wake up and it's sunny and we'll have breakfast outside and what have you. And then I reminded her that we're probably going to be waking up and it'll be raining outside. The kids will be screaming. The dog will need a poo. So that's probably going to be the reality of it, but we'll see how that goes. Yep.
That's fantastic. When will it be delivered?
May. Actually on Star Wars Day. So, yeah, should be fun.
That's cool.
Mm. We're too, like, you know, we need too much instant gratification. If I can't buy it today, I'm not going to mess with it. I want to go buy it and drive it home.
It was quite an impulse buy. We were thinking about it, and we went to a caravan and camping exhibition at the National Exhibition Centre here in Birmingham, and it's a huge place. So we got to see every single type of caravan, and we got a good deal. And so I
committed. How big is it? How many meters?
I can give you it in feet.
Perfect. I prefer.
I think it's probably like 30 feet long. It's 8 foot wide.
Oh, great. That's a great, perfect
size. Yeah, sleep 6 people. So,
do you have a vehicle that can pull something that big?
I do. I have a Volvo XC90 that can pull that.
Really?
Yeah.
No, Brett, that sounds a little close to glamping. Really, you know, that's American term. Like, we go camping. There's a glamping. That's
does it have a loo?
Kind of luxurious.
It does have a toilet and a shower. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's glamping.
Does it have slide outs?
No, it does not. No, no.
Okay.
See, your impulse buys sound radically different than my impulse buys. Your impulse buys sounds awesome. My impulse buys, since I've had a long week, sound like this.
So, speaking of impulse buys, I actually have an impulse buy from this week. Actually, it was a couple weeks ago. I got the new Galaxy S10 Plus. It was just released. So if we wanted to talk about technology, we could talk about the phone that was just released. But I like talking about camping better. So,
tell me about the phone, Mark.
What's so special about it?
So I got it because I loathe my Pixel XL2. I used to do Samsung Galaxies only. And then when the Pixel XL2 came out, I thought I would give it a shot. But it was besides the phone, besides the camera, I hated the phone. It was one of the worst phones I ever had. So I was keeping an eye out for the next Samsung Galaxy. And this one, it's just came out. It's got three cameras on the back. It's got a wide-angle lens, a regular lens, and then a telephoto lens. And then it's got two selfie cameras as well. So it's supposed to be like one of the best things about it is the phone, the camera, if you're a camera guy. It's got 12 gigs of RAM.
That first selfie from the S3 or whatever for the picture you posted on Facebook, was that the one?
Yeah. I posted a picture on it. So it's got this live focus where it's like it'll focus on you and turn everything else black and white. And it makes it also a background blur on it. So it does a pretty good job of doing some things like that. It does it all live. So you don't have to wait for the post-processing to see it. You can see it preview.
Hmm.
It's a 512 gig phone with 12 gigs of RAM. It's like it's a beast. But so far, I haven't dug into it too much. But the other thing about it, it's got a screen fingerprint reader. So the fingerprint scanner to log you in is actually on the screen itself. But it's 5G capable, even though there's not any 5G yet. But we'll see how it goes. I'm happy with it. I like it better than the Pixel.
So the founder, what's his name? Lee Samsung. He must have done a really good job of of coming up with that, right?
Tim Apple sure did.
Yeah. So for those... So he's not aware that's another jab at Trump. So
that's great. That's great.
Samsung. Have you ever met Kevin Deloitte, by the way, Rob?
I have not. Deloitte is actually a guy's name. So it is a guy's name. Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, yep. Then my joke is less funny.
Yep. I did see a paper that whatever his name was, Deloitte, signed for doing work for the U.S. government back in the 1860s. The work order was signed by President Abraham Lincoln, which is pretty cool.
Kind of
historical. Yeah, pretty historical document. So it's, that was kind of a neat thing to see. But anyway, yeah, technology. As far as me, I've been working hard. It's been a rough week for me. I kind of vented a little bit on IM and the beginning of this call. But no, it's been a good. You know, one of the best things that have come out of this project for me is I have learned that there is a Microsoft Graph SDK. Out there. And previously I've been calling the REST endpoints for the graph. So if you go to the graph documentation, there's a endpoint that you can call for whatever, graph.microsoft.com/1.0 or whatever the URL is. I can't remember off the top of my head now, but it's, and you can call the endpoint to get whatever information you need. So if you need the usage reports, there's an endpoint for that. If you need a user, properties about a user, there's an endpoint for that. Properties about OneDrive, there's an endpoint for that. Well, what the Graph SDK does is it rolls up all of those endpoints into an object that you can call and go get. So if you want to get a group, you just go get the groups and then pass in what group ID and it brings you back the group properties. And I have to say, I know, Mark, you've been doing a ton of stuff with the Graph and said this is kind of, you've heard of the SDK but not used it yet. I have to say, it is really awesome. I mean, it really simplifies all of the stuff you need to get everything in the graph for you. And an example of what it meant for me was that I needed to add a piece of functionality to one of my Azure functions. The piece of functionality I needed to add was I needed to provide an Azure function that allows me to invite guests into Azure Active Directory. Well, there's an invitations endpoint in the graph that allows you to do this. And as long as your client ID, your application where your client ID and client secret is stored, has those, that your credential has the permissions to invite guests, you don't have to change anything about your object or anything like that you're working with. You just call into the Graph SDK as you normally would, and it just works. So you don't have to know the endpoints. You just have to know your way around the SDK. And for me, that's great. It saved me so much time this week. I mean, it just learning it paid for itself for me.
Well, and I would imagine not only do you not have to know the endpoints, but you don't have to construct the headers and everything for the calls either, right? I'm assuming it does all that for you as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so that's...
Well, and
I'm using it. I'm done. Well, I'm using
and
it.
And not only that, it returns an object with all of the properties there. So when you get a group, it has all of the properties that are returned for a group. So if you return that, if you're in C#, if you're turning that into a var object, you're going to get all the properties and get all the your group ID and created date time and all that. So your display name, all that stuff comes back in an object that you can use. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm sold. I'm sold.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know how many people out there are using it that are listening, but I mean, if you're not, I mean, it's a NuGet package. So you just go into Visual Studio, you add the NuGet package, just search for Microsoft.graph, and it'll bring all the libraries in, and you're off to the races at that point. Now, you still have to build your authorization header, so you have to get your bearer token and things like that, pass that in. But once you do that, I mean, it's just all dealing with objects, sending, calling methods, and then it returns objects to you. Based on whatever you're retrieving.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Great stuff. Cool. That's been my week.
So something
go ahead.
Well, I mean, at least someone was doing something productive. but something we ran into this week, I don't think we've talked about it before, is one of the greatest joys of my life is responding to RFPs. That was sarcasm for those who cannot hear it in my voice. But one of the things we got was a request for a proposal for migration to SharePoint Online, and they wanted to modernize their current on-prem environment, and everything had to be modern. And one of the things they said was, we have InfoPath forms, we want to modernize, but we have no idea how many InfoPath forms we have. And now I want you to estimate this for us. So I don't know if you guys know of any way to actually go through a farm and determine how many InfoPath forms there are on the farm easily. But one of the things that we found is that buddies of all of ours run a company called Rencore. And Rencore has a tool, they have a risk audit tool. And you can actually download this tool for free. You can run it on your environment and it will spit out a lot of information to help you see what's in your environment that may cause some sort of risk migrating to Office 365, including how many InfoPath forms you have. So if you want to, you can do like a paid engagement on the tool and get even more detail. But for free, you can get a lot of information to help you kind of look at things that would impact your ability to be able to migrate. So that's something I learned this week. We had them use it. It turns out they didn't have as many forms as we were scared they would have. And yeah, that
helped a lot. They also have another product as well that they co-developed with Skybo. And that will actually convert the InfoPath forms out to the Skybo Rich Forms product. So yeah, you can basically migrate all of that layout and everything that you had in your InfoPath form and get working with it straight away in basically lists. So.
You know, I have to say, I can't say enough good things about the Rencore products. I mean, I think they've, we have a fairly large on-premises instance of SharePoint, you know, multiple of them. And I forgot what the name of their tool is, but the thing you're talking about, Mark, to where it allows you to go in and analyze your farm, and it'll tell you kind of things about it, where things are, where your biggest risks are, and things like that. I mean, that thing is just an absolute godsend for us. Because, I mean, we just don't, it's so big when you have, you know, tens of thousands of site collections out there. It's impossible to go through and know exactly what's going on. And their tool makes it really easy to do and really easy to analyze. And it's an invaluable tool.
And they better start sponsoring our podcast, I'm telling you.
Well, we'll talk to those guys in a few weeks and see what does.
That's right. Yeah. We'll see them at MVP Summit so we can talk to them then.
I'm a fan of any tool that makes RFPs easier because I have to tell you, like, as Mark mentioned, like, it's not the easiest thing. And especially what we're seeing with the transition into the cloud and the modernization and all of that, the RFPs are coming in somewhat vague and you're expected to bid on things that aren't necessarily understood by those that support them. So what I mean by that is, you know, they'll come in and they'll say, well, we need to upgrade and here's how much content we have and, you know, that's it. And you're going, okay, do you want to modernize? Have you talked about modernizing? Is Teams in the picture? Is, you know, are you converting InfoPath forms to Power Apps? Are you looking at workflows? Do you want to do flow? And they're like, oh yeah, just include the forms and workflows. And you're going, that's a rebuild scenario. And if you're going to rebuild, are you going to take your time? And do you know that these things migrate? There's this whole conversation to have around migration now. It's not just moving from point A to point B, but it's transitioning the way you work. And it's not RFP ready.
Well, and they hear the buzzwords.
Yes.
They hear like, oh, I want Teams and I want HubSites. Do it. And I'm like, well, do you even know what that means? No, but we want it. Bid on it.
Yeah.
It's
RFPs, they were always challenging, but right now I think they're especially challenging to try and figure out. The one customer, they had told us we had overbid it by like 10 times higher than everyone else. And we were like, whoa, I don't know what happened, but we felt confident in our bid. And they came back later and said, oh, well, the other groups underbid because they didn't understand that those were site collections instead of subsites, you know? And it's like, it's interesting. It's just even some of the consulting groups, given the information, aren't fully processing what's there and what's available. So it's just, it's really, what I'm toying with right now is I would love to put together like consultant's guide to an RFP or an RFQ, right? That's something that would help them put together what to ask for so that by the time it gets to us, we're not losing all that time in the back and forth. And just like today, we're now scrambling over the weekend to update an RFP that's due Monday. When we just got all that information, that awesome Rencore information back yesterday evening or yesterday late in the day. So, you know, anything to help people through that process.
Yeah, I think that does increase the accuracy of the quote you can give back as well. If they say, hey, we've got 150 InfoPath forms, we've got customizations deployed to 30 sites and blah, 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 and all of this, I think it does help, I mean, tremendously in the way you can estimate, because until you get in there and look at it, you just don't know what you're going into, right? I mean, you don't know if it's, if it's just a straight out of the box, somebody installed SharePoint and they started using it, there's no customizations, or they went full bore and customized the whole thing.
Right.
And also, if you're out there and you're thinking about migrating to Office 365 and you're thinking about releasing an RFP, please pay somebody to do an assessment on your farm so that they can get that information put together for your RFP, so that it will be accurate and you'll know what you're in the you're in what you're being set up for, because it's not, it could be sticker shock once you really look at, if you want to go full bore modern and you're sitting in 2010 classic right now, it's not a small task.
Mommy yes. Shark, mommy shark.
What happened? I lose audio for like 20 seconds and you guys are singing Baby Shark.
I had never heard it before, so now I'm tainted.
Yeah. Y'all see what happens to this? It's out of control animals, man. No, one of the questions I got this week from one of my customers was they essentially wanted to know if they could add, they've got a team, a Microsoft team, which has a connected group site connected to it. And they wanted to know if they could add that group site to a hub site. And, you know, we've talked many times how on the show about Teams and, you know, how possibly you want to avoid customizations as much as possible in that. And I'm wondering, I mean, is that something that you could probably do that?
I don't see why not. It's basically a team site, right? And yeah, you can associate it with a hub site. I would have thought.
I don't know why. It's, like you said, it's just a SharePoint team site. There's no reason you couldn't attach it.
Does it matter?
No.
Don't think so.
No, Teams is just a conversation. Well, it's at a high level, it's just a conversation piece on top of SharePoint, along with Planner and a couple other things. But the SharePoint site behind the scenes is a full-blown SharePoint team site. You can absolutely create applications in that team site, add lists and libraries. You could attach it to a hub. There's nothing special or magical about that team site.
Right. But you, even though you can, should you?
Why shouldn't you? I'll tell you why you shouldn't.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you, man. Yeah. You guys are the experts here.
Sorry, go ahead, Stephanie.
My thought here is that you're still going to have some people that come in, probably from an executive standpoint, management standpoint. Maybe they don't need the nitty gritty details of the conversations going on every day. They prefer SharePoint. Can you send them to a hub to get everything rolled up into one place? Why not? Right? It's still a way of grouping and rolling things up in a different interface. And you still, you know, if you want to see all the news across everything or all the events across the sites that are in that hub, it's still, to me, it's still, there's still good use for that, even though you're utilizing some of the Teams features. Because to me, Teams is somewhat limited in terms of what it presents to you. And then you're still kind of hopping out and using the rest of the SharePoint features. I don't have any issue with it.
My concern, does it, and this is probably the stupidest question I've ever asked on the show, but once you add it to the hub site, will it do anything with the authorization? So does the hub site have an authorization thing at the top that does anything to the team sites that are connected to it?
So if...
The permissions are autonomous, right?
Yeah, separate.
Yes, mm-hmm. Permissions are separate. And even if you gave someone access to the SharePoint team site directly, they wouldn't necessarily have access to Teams.
Right, right. But once you join that site to the hub site, is there a top level permissions that get inherited? Or no. Is it just the hub site is just a collection of sites that it rolls things up to?
And that to me is a huge... selling point for using hub sites and associated sites, because when we were using sub sites, that's where permissions went horribly wrong. Like somebody would, even if you broke the permission inheritance and you're sharing at the top level site, then you're still adding people to those members groups that are then getting permissions to the sub sites because they've got to remove the old groups or whatever. So there's no risk of that anymore. You're getting the benefits of the sort of navigation and the roll up and all that sort of stuff. But not necessarily the permissions headaches that we used to have.
Very interesting. I don't know. The more I thought about it, it sounded like a logical thing to do. I don't know if anybody's doing it yet or not. Or if anybody's done it.
Well, we kind of go the opposite, not the opposite route, but we have a client that has, it's a project hub with all the project sites that are associated with that hub. And the fact is that they're using those project sites. We teamified them after the fact because they weren't using Teams yet, but we teamified those project sites and now they can have a conversation about, they can go into Teams, have conversations about projects, but the things like tasks and stuff roll up in the hub for everyone to see. And you see the tasks and stuff that of course you have access to see. So it works. You should not shy away from using those SharePoint sites as a part of Teams. I mean, it's more than just having a document library there. It is SharePoint. Use it.
I'm conflicted on that. I'm
getting very fond of SharePoint again. the improvements that they're making to document libraries and things like that. Yeah. And that is, I think, as a result of also the hub sites and because we haven't got content types really anymore that they were scooped to a site collection. So some of the improvements that they're making to the document libraries where you can just add a template now, any document. So one reason for using a content type was obviously to add a template. So now you can just add those templates to the new menu of document library anyway. And things like that. Great.
A site can only belong to one hub site, right?
That is correct.
Yep.
Yes, definitely.
And so that's good. I say it's good. Maybe not. I don't know. I could see the need to want to add it to multiple hub sites if you wanted to. Maybe you had a hub site that was shared across geographic boundaries, right? You might have a North American hub site and a European hub site or whatever.
You can still search into those with search though if you want.
You could. So. What about, I want to revisit this customization thing in SharePoint. Are your customers doing that? Because I've advised not to customize SharePoint, or when I say customize SharePoint, use SharePoint as a platform to build applications. So adding a bunch of lists, adding a bunch of custom things inside of there. Now, this is a SharePoint site that's connected to Teams.
It's just a SharePoint site. Why would you not take advantage of what's there? Why would you not add an issues list? If you have a project team, why not add an issues list to your SharePoint site?
Well, define what customize means, though.
Well, you just said list of libraries.
SharePoint list isn't necessarily what I would consider a customization. So, Rob, define what you mean by customization.
When I say customization here,
I'm adding lists and libraries. So
yeah, yeah, so configuration, I guess, would be more the model here.
We even had a conversation with Mark Cashman several months ago about the fact that it is a full-blown SharePoint site. It's meant to be used as SharePoint. It's there to be used.
What if it breaks? What if the user does something to break it?
Well, the users are always going to be, what if they do something to break Teams?
What if you share it with the wrong person?
Help.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what are they going to do to break it? What are they going to do to break? They're not going to break Teams. It's what do you mean by what are they going to do to break it? You don't have web parts anymore, so you're not going to be breaking pages.
Well, I just think about the support of this, right? To say, I've got 30,000 team sites, almost 40,000 team sites now that are out there. If we had 40,000 of these sites and all of them were custom, right? The SharePoint sites behind these 40,000 sites were custom. I mean, from a support perspective, that's an absolute nightmare to try to support.
Are you saying you wouldn't have a lot of sites regardless? How many sub-sites and sites did you have before Teams? Were you allowing people to create Teams or sites in SharePoint? It's the same thing. Why tie one hand behind your back and say, no, you can have the document library, but don't touch anything else?
I think it depends on the governance you put down, because if they created in what they call an application or a configuration that's a custom list, then a lot of customers of ours will put them in a different queue. So if IT built it, you're in the high queue. And if you built it, you're going to have to wait. And if something comes up because you built it, it wasn't IT designed and approved and whatever. So if it breaks, you're at risk because you're the one who customized the site. That's the approach some of our customers have taken. That way, They don't, you know, there's a lower liability for IT to when you're in a scenario where you're supporting so many sites that it would become, you know, really difficult.
But you both, you and Rob said when they break something, if you're using out of the box SharePoint, if you're creating lists and libraries, if you're taking advantage of the new list view formatters and the column view formatters, if you're using some out of the box web parts, what are you going to break? I mean, it's, this isn't people writing code and dumping script on a page and script.
And that they actually can't do very easily now. So yeah, you can't use a script editor anymore and just dump some script in there without enabling it.
So this fear of breakage, I mean, I would want to see
what you mean by break too, though. If they customize the site and they change something and then they need assistance because they, you know, the form doesn't work anymore because they changed a field and they don't know what they did, that they would need, we see that all the time.
But then this all goes back to the training, like it's training and governance thing, right? Make sure people actually trained. And I think Rob even said they have to go through some training to do things at Deloitte before they're given any keys to do anything like that, sort of, kind of. I really would not tell people to not use SharePoint in Teams because there is so much that Microsoft is investing in SharePoint to make it, to keep adding features that users want. If you haven't even looked like it, if you haven't seen the list view formatting they've got going on, you can create some amazing stuff with the list view formatter for your SharePoint lists.
So what I was going to do is I was going to take this to another direction here. And this is probably a fodder for another show. But while we're on the topic, we're essentially talking about not having SharePoint as an offering for collaboration except through Teams or groups, modern groups, right? And is there a value in launching SharePoint Online as a product, right? Is there an actual value of launching it? So you can do communication sites, you can do hub sites. Other than that, what else can we use
SharePoint? That's your intranet, right? And the intranet is the key, that's kind of the hub of everything in a lot of organizations. And now, Rob, from your perspective, you guys custom built your intranet, so you don't need a heavy reliance on out-of-the-box communication sites or whatever. But I do think from an intranet perspective, pushing information, publishing information, that it's still really important. But I like what you're saying in terms of collaboration, like no more file shares, no more SharePoint sites. Like if you need to collaborate together, that's in a team and then it's under a retention policy and you're good to go. Like I think that's a great plan from that perspective.
And well, even when you build Teams applications, you can still attach that team application to lists in the SharePoint site that you're building it for. So if you want to build some nice web parts, add those as tabs in Teams. They're still in Teams, but the content may be in a list in SharePoint. So you are doing stuff in SharePoint. You know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can still do, even if they're not directly navigating to SharePoint. Maybe it's just a tab in that team that they're in.
And I love what the sort of thing we've been doing with that now. So you can develop a single product for either the Teams tab or as a client-side web part, and it's exactly the same product.
Yeah.
But you can find out what context your product is in, whether it's in a Teams tab or whether it's on a SharePoint page, and do things differently depending on where it's at.
Yeah, and if you're a small, medium-sized business and you need an intranet, you don't have a big IT department, you're going to be using SharePoint for your intranet. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, especially with everything that they're adding to it to make it easier to build the sites in the modern experience. It lends itself really fantastically to intranets for those groups. Mm.
This is one thing I love about having such a diverse set of hosts. I mean, I think you guys really, really did help me answer this question, because I think it is something that's, I don't know that I'm the only person that has these questions. I mean, I think it's this is something I think that we have to work through and work with every day. And I think as Office 365 professionals, this story is constantly evolving, right? And I do believe that we have a different view on how we should use this stuff now than we did 2 months ago, 3 months ago, right? And if you go back and listen to the team show where we talked about don't customize the SharePoint site, that's a great, you know, this is a great evolution of that. And I think this is a This is a great discussion to have, and I hope we can continue it, because I don't think it's going to stop evolving from here.
No, it won't. Not at this pace either.
It's an exciting place to be right now, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that something that radical can at least our opinions on something that radical can change in such a short amount of time. And that just tells you how fast the platform itself is evolving.
Well, there've been some protections put into place too with the Teams connected sites, because they're now better identifying. I think the problem before with customizing revolved primarily around the document library, the default shared documents library, and its connection, because there's one folder in there per channel in Teams. And I'm still leery, to be honest, to do too much with that library. But the good news is that Microsoft's done a good job now, and I don't know if it's fully rolled out, but it identifies that folder as being connected to Teams, so that, you know, that temptation we have to rename folders that are linked to channels or whatever, that they're kind of starting to call that out, so it doesn't look like a normal folder that we could do those things to. So that's the one library I would still say tread lightly with, because of that association to the files tab in each channel in Teams.
I agree. Another thing, though, with this constant rate of change and the constant pace of change, I think this is a great warning to all organizations. In the past, in SharePoint, we've been able to hack things to get it to work the way we want it to work. Oh, we can do a hack to make that work. Or we can hack that master page. Or you want to hide that ribbon? Sure, we can do something to hack that in there. I think it's becoming more and more dangerous to do anything that could be considered a hack in Office 365 because of this pace of change. So it's as exciting as it is, it also makes it very critical that you stay checked in with what the best practices are and what tools have they put in place to help us do our jobs, like the new Teams applications and the things that you can do with the SharePoint framework. And if you're doing something like finding a script editor web part that works on a modern page and you're putting some hacks in there, it is going to exponentially hurt you going forward if you're not careful. So just a little free advice there from me. I'm sure Brett's nodding. He agrees with me.
I absolutely agree with you. I always do.
You know, speaking of hacks, we had one hack in place we were still seeing where you could make your root site homepage modern without the left side navigation. And now finally we've got word that those communication site features are coming to the root site that was formally announced. So pretty exciting. We'll get rid of one of those. That's the one hack that I was, if you're going to hack the site, that's not a terrible one. We have differing opinions on that and maybe not putting that into production, but we did have customers doing that. So I'm pretty excited to see those new communication site features show up on the root. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Definitely. And it looks like they've not finished yet with that as well. They're going to carry on improving that process as well. Cool. Rob, you look like you've been mind blown.
This has been a great show. I've heard a lot. I mean, I'm just so happy with the show. And and this is another one of those shows for those that are listening. We were trying to figure out what to talk about today, and we didn't know. And I was like, well, let's just hit record and just see what happens. and this always seems to be the shows I enjoy doing the most, I think, because we're just freeform talking. I mean, we didn't have any plans. We just took it in a direction that I think it actually worked. And we talked about some really cool stuff. I want to, at some point, have a conversation with you guys, and it'll probably be after Summit, after we learn a little more about what's happening. But I want to have a conversation about on-premises SharePoint versus SharePoint Online. Like, is there a need today to install SharePoint on-premises? Is that a reality in today's world outside of the federal world? Right. So if you go to DC, I think we talked, everything is on premises. If you're installing a new platform, a new SharePoint farm, given that we are about to go general availability with multi-geo with SharePoint, is it a reality to do it on premises or to go to the cloud? I don't know the answer. I think that's something we need to hash out. I think that's something we all need to learn more about at the MVP Summit. And I think that's something that I would love to bring to the show. I think that's something that people have questions about. I have questions about.
A great guy to talk to, and maybe we can get him on the show, would be Alex Draskovich from Microsoft. He's a lot of people see SharePoint 2019 as just SharePoint 2016 with the modern features. But yeah, if you were trying to sell it to an organization, that's what they might see. But actually, there's a lot of changes under the skin as well. I think it's yeah, performs a lot better than 2016, and there's some good architectural changes with it.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can pin him down, because I think
Roman in 2 weeks. Perfect.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We'll get him on.
If we can't get him on the show, let's pin him down and at least ask him some questions so that we can bring the feedback back to our listeners. It might take you to pin him down.
Have you seen the size of the guy? Is he big guy? I think he might even be bigger than you.
I think he is. Yeah, he is.
All right. Yeah, we'll throw down.
Nicest guy in the world, though, so he's not quite like you.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and oh, what a puppy! I see Stephanie's puppy.
She's running on the action. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and call it a show. I think it's a great show, and I appreciate just for me being a hopefully you guys' friend. But thanks for the advice and everything. I think you guys really helped me out on the show, and the discussion has been very productive for me. And I hope everybody listening was got the same out of it, because I think this is something I've been struggling with and something I had to think about all the time and evolve my thoughts on it as well, and not have kind of get sucked into that blinders vision to here's the strategy for Office 365, because it is always changing. So thank you guys for that. And I hope it was as equally as fun for you guys as well.
Absolutely. Get yourself out to a SharePoint conference and you'll learn lots.
Speaking of that, is there a SharePoint conference coming up actually?
Maybe.
Oh, you mean mine?
Yeah.
So this is we recorded this show the Friday before my event, which starts next Thursday. So
it was the event that happened 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, so it's the event that happened 3 weeks ago that Stephanie I'll talk about in the show notes. So my stress level is about 10,046% right now. But yeah, it's going to be a fun event. And I'm looking forward to it. So for those people who made it, thank you for coming. And for those who don't,
was that dig? Was that dig?
That's not a dig. I know I know it's hard to get to Branson. No hard feelings. But definitely, I expect everyone who's listening to this podcast to make it to our show in 2020. So keep your ears open for that.
Cool. All right. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you very much. And I will see you guys in Seattle.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you have any questions or comments, shoot us an email at info@techsplaining.net, and we will see you soon.
Cheers.